Oh, such a good question.
Well, when you come with these questions, that's another great branding question.
That's a big question.
That's a very interesting question because it really makes you think about what you just did.
Welcome to the Your Living Brand.Life show. This show is all about how you communicate your value, how you build influence through trust, and recognizing who your audience is and who they are not. Through our weekly conversations with our guests, we will explore different ways to enable you to demonstrate your uniqueness while we ask them, what's your story? And now, welcome our host, Ben Baker.
Welcome back to another episode of the Your Living Brand.Live show. This is Ben Baker coming to you. Thanks, everybody, for being amazing, amazing guests, you know, from this podcast. I love it. Week after week, we get people that email me at ben@yourbrandmarketing.com. Tell me what you like. Tell me what I could do better. Tell me what the guests that you want to have on. Give me your questions. I love it all. It's all about the audience. It's all about you guys. It's all about being better for you. And I love the fact that every single week, I get encouragement from you. I get you say, hey, what about this? Why didn't you ask them that? It's great because we always have so much fun together. Wherever you listen, whether it's Spotify, iTunes, iHeart, wherever, subscribe. Pick your favorite one and subscribe to it. We love having you guys on board. This week, I've got a real treat for you. Jeffrey Hazlett is the president, the CEO, the founder, the brains behind C-Suite Network. He is the ex-chief marketing officer of Eastman Kodak. You know, he was even on a Celebrity Apprentice as a judge. So we are going to have some amazing things to talk about. Jeffrey, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be on this show.
Hey, we had a really good conversation a few weeks ago. We were both in Vancouver, and neither one of us had time to get to the other side of the city to see each other. So
yeah,
nice that we were at least able to do this.
You know, that happens to me all the time. I'm in New York City, and people are actually in my office, and I don't have time. So there was somebody that's coming in my office tomorrow, and she's looking to raise $100 million for an anti-human trafficking thing, and she's in meeting with my team and having great meetings, but I can't even step out during that time period. I mean, the team is now scheduling bathroom breaks for me. Yeah, that's how busy we are, which is awesome.
It is awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It is, because, you know, you just get to work every day and you go, where did the day go? All of a sudden, it's 6 o'clock at night. And you're looking around going, okay, did we accomplish anything today? Cool, we did. Awesome.
You know, Ben, I love the fact that business gets that way. In fact, one of the things that for me is I go to bed at night hoping I'll hurry up and sleep just so I can get started the next day. That's the way I go about business. That's the way I go about life for the most part. But really, for me, that's business is so much fun. Actually, would do it for free, but getting paid is how we keep score.
It's true. And that's all it is. It's a scorecard. That's all it is. I'm with you. I think it's the entrepreneurial mentality. I truly believe it. It is. Because I hear all the time from my friends, oh, thank God it's Friday. Thank God it's Friday. You know, I get a weekend. I'm going, you know what? To me, Monday, Sunday, Tuesday doesn't really matter. I'm just excited to get up and see what's next.
Yeah, my doorman says that when I'm home Fridays. You know, he says the same thing. You know, and I'm going like, dude, it's just a Friday because Saturday I'm working, Sunday I'm working. I'm having a great time. Dude, I want to do that all the time. So it's like, I don't care what day it is, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Let's go. Let's do business. Let's have fun. And let's do some good. And
oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And I think the doing good is the big part of doing, you know, of real success. I mean, yeah, as you said, money is a benchmark. It's a stick. It's a line in the sand to sit there. It is. But the question is how much good are we doing? That's what I measure myself against at the end of the day. Have I done really good work? Have I helped people? Have I made other people's lives better? The answer is yes. I've had a great day.
Well, I try to just move off my to-do list. And if I have great values, I'll get the good stuff, the good stuff done the way it needs to be. But, you know, that's why we lead groups in our C-suite network. We have things like our Hero Club, which is a value-based organization of CEOs. And we have a lot of these different groups that are part of it. And it's just nice to be able to just watch great leaders perform and do the things they need to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's get into this because I was, just before we got on air, I was watching a keynote of yours, and the key topic of it was Think Big, Act Bigger, which is, if I'm right, it's the name of one of your books.
It's the third book.
It's your third book.
Yeah, my third bestseller, actually, because I've got four of them.
Wow.
And that was my third one, and I think we sold about 1 million copies of that book, so we're pretty excited about it.
Hey, listen, I'll take whatever you paid in taxes on that.
You know, you don't make too much on books.
No, you don't.
Most people don't know that you really don't make a lot of money on books. You use the books to market yourself, to position yourself as a thought leader, or position yourself in the marketplace. And that's really what books are about. Unless you're Michelle Obama or someone really, or Tom Clancy, you're not making a lot of money on books.
No. I mean, when I wrote my book a couple of years ago, it was right. It was to position myself as a thought leader. I've made far more money because of the book than I'll ever make off the book.
Oh, that's the name of the game. It's a positioning tool. It's a brand builder, and one of the many things that you could have in your brand that's at your, one of the tools that you have. Just like I have, you have a podcast, I have two podcasts. Just like others have different ways to differentiate. So I have television shows. I host a television show, and that's just some of the things that we do to be able to position ourselves. Do we make a lot of money with it? Well, when I'm on Bloomberg and have my own primetime show, or when I was a judge on Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump, those are where I was making good money. But at the same time, it's not that much. I made a lot more money being in business than I ever did in television or radio or podcasting or book as a book author. But those are great, great tools for me to use in telling my story, which is exactly what you're all about.
Absolutely. And I find that it's a great introduction. People say, oh, you've written a book. Or In your case, you've written four books and three of them are bestsellers.
No, you all four. No. Let's be clear. All four of them are bestsellers.
Oh, pardon me. All four of them are bestsellers.
That was just my third one.
Pardon me. I bow to your greatness.
I just want to keep the facts straight, brother.
These are important things, you know?
Hey, we work hard at it. And if work hard at it, you want to get credit for it. Just like I've been married for 37 years and I was engaged for two. So I tell everybody I've been together with my wife for 39. And she likes to tell everybody it's only been 37 years we've been married. I said, look, I worked hard for those 2 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And if I remember correctly, listening to the story, it says, when you get home, there's the boss.
Ain't no doubt about it. You know, I'm 6'3", 270 odd pounds, and she's 5'11", 105 pounds. And ain't no doubt she'd kick any day of the week.
I think we're married to similar women. I'm 6'2", and, you know, I look down at my wife, and I know that with one stare, she's got me going, uh-huh, yeah, no problem, we'll do that.
Very cool. Well, that's the way it should be.
Absolutely. You're 37, I'm 23 years of marriage, but you know what? It's a wonderful thing.
It is.
It's a partnership.
Well, my wife says it's the best 11 non-consecutive years of her life. So there we go.
There we go. So let's get into Think Big, Act Bigger, because beyond the title of the book, it's the philosophy behind it that I really want to get into, because I love that thought is that too many people in this world don't think big or don't think big enough.
And then don't put it in action. They come up with great ideas, but an idea without implementation is nothing but air.
Exactly. And
so you see this all the time. Somebody paid me a great compliment after that book. They said it was a speaker conference I was at, and they got up and said, what would you like to be? And this woman got up and she said, I would love to have the eloquence of Les Brown, who's a Hall of Fame speaker along with myself. And then she said, and the swagger of Jeffrey Hazlett. And I thought that was cool because, okay, now that's the essence. You know, why can't we do things with bigger, with zeros? Think, you know, just because we did it this way before, why can't we do it like this? Because we can. And that's my philosophy. In fact, right over my desk I have an office in South Dakota, and I actually put this on my websites because everybody says, why do you have an office in South Dakota? And I said, because we can. I just got tired of telling everybody that. So it's because we can.
And I look at it and sit there going, because we can. We need to sit there and look at things and go, how can we make things better? How can we take things to the next level? I was having a conversation with a guy the other day, and he was telling me about the fact that he's so busy. He's all busy. And he's going from meeting to meeting to meeting. And I said, okay, well, what's your average client worth to you? And he's in the insurance business. And his average insurance job was under $200. I said, so you're telling me you're taking half-hour meetings and driving all over God's green acre for $200 meetings? I couldn't understand. I said, look, I came to the conclusion years and years ago, it's just as easy for me to do $50,000 to $100,000 jobs as it is for me to do $500,000 to $1,000 jobs. Yeah. They take as much effort. The relationship marketing is exactly the same. The effort is the same. Why would you sit there and work on $500 to $1,000 projects when you can work on $50,000 to $100,000 to $500,000 to $1 million projects. Right. You know, and there's people that think bigger than I do. I'll fully admit that. But I think that that's a really salient point that we need to drive down to people, that thinking small gets you small results.
Yeah, totally. It's without question. You know, and I think with all of that, you have to decide priorities, where you want to set. You know, it's like I look at my schedule every day. You talk about that guy being very busy. I'm very busy. But at the same time, I'll look at my schedule like I did today. And I had a whole bunch of stuff lined up for this morning. I had something that was more important. I had to complete some other business better for our long-term stability and success of our business in terms of scale. It was around fundraising and bringing in an investment that I just canceled everything in the morning. And I have to do that. So I look at every schedule every day and say, are the things on here going to lead me to where I want to go? Are they higher? What's the highest priority and use of my time? Is this the best use of my time? Make a call one way or the other. And that's really how we do it. And you got to do that every single day. So that's thinking big and acting bigger. It's like, and it's being relentless about it too. You have to be relentless. You have to continually do this. You have to continually improve, continue add zeros, continually push, push, and push. You know, that's what successful people do.
But it's being successful, and I'll bring it down to it, is being successful on your terms. Is one thing that you said. Is that money is a benchmark. For somebody, $100 million is a great month. Some people, $100 million is a great lifetime.
Yeah.
And it's a matter of sitting going, what are your goals? What does success look like to you? And well, what do you want in your life? Like for me, I'm home every night. I've decided years ago, I built an office in my house. Why? Because I'm home for dinner every single night, 95% of the nights of the year. I'm home for dinner. Why? Because when I was younger, I had young kids and it was important.
Yeah.
That's what, and it might've been that after dinner, after the kids went to sleep, I went back to work at night. But it was important for me when I was starting out this business that I was going to be home for dinner and be able to spend time with the kids. That's how I built my business. Yeah, there's ways I could have made more money. I could have traveled more. I could have done other things. But what it would have done is it would have kept me away from doing the things that for me was success. And my success was making sure that my kids knew who dad was.
Yeah, which is, I mean, that's your conditions of satisfaction. And most people don't even work those out. So I always talk to them about what's your conditions of satisfaction, your personal conditions of satisfaction that for your business. What are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things, whatever it might be that you want to get out of the business. But even think about that in terms of between you and your spouse or you and your children, you and your friends, what's my mutual conditions of satisfaction? And if you operate like that, and that's how we operate inside of our business, is we have promises and there's performers and owners of various tasks and things that we have to do for the business. But personal conditions of satisfaction, I have three. One, I want to build wealth for me and my family. I want to be able to have them to have the kind of life I didn't have as we were growing, as they're growing up, you know, and I didn't have it when I was growing up, but we were pretty poor. I mean, we didn't do without, but we didn't have a lot.
Sure.
And so now I want that to be different. Second is I want to learn new things. I'm always interested in doing new things. And sometimes I get to a point where I've already done all these things and I don't want to do them again. I'm not really interested in doing a TV show on an ongoing basis. I want to do it a different way. I'm not interested in doing a broadcast kind of show because it's just a different kind of animal. And I've done it. And so now I'm going to do nothing but digital TV and streaming TV. And I love that because I get to control my own schedules. And then third, it's got to be fun. And if it's not fun, I don't want to do it. So make money, learn something new, and have fun. Those are my three big conditions of satisfaction.
And that's important to know what your priorities are. That really is. By knowing those things and being able to articulate those things, every decision that you make comes out of those three points.
Totally.
Is it going to make me the kind of money that I want for my family? Am I going to have fun doing it? And is it the type of stuff that I really want to do? Yeah. If the answer to that is no, then why are we doing it?
Yeah, then it's off my list. I'm not doing it. Yeah, exactly. That's no. And I have that all the time. I mean, people come to me, my team all the time. I say, well, hey, Jeff, let's do this. Blah, blah, blah. No, not doing it. But it's for this, not doing it. Because I don't have to. And two, because it doesn't meet my conditions.
And how do you go about it as organizations get larger? You drive a much larger organization than I do. How do you make sure that mentality and those set of priorities articulated on an ongoing basis within the organization so everybody knows what the priorities are, what are the things that are important, who the customers are important, where the real value is, and what everybody's marching towards?
Well, you have to be transparent. That's the first thing, is to have radical transparency in the organization. So one, people know about them, you talk about them, then you align around your values, and then you align around your conditions of satisfaction. If everybody understands that and you're clear about it, you're checking in, then you have great trust amongst the group. I mean, that's what builds hero organizations, hero cultures, is to have an acceptance and understanding around the values. You know, 53% of the people that work in a company don't even know what the mission and vision of the company is. And so they don't even get into the values, even more don't know the values. So first of all, let's talk about our values as a company, where they are, where they sit. How do you believe? Can you articulate them? Can you articulate them back to me? Do we live in them every single day? But someone sees us do this, they understand that we should do this, you know? So those are the kind of things I think you have to put forward, and you have to be just straight, really straight up on it. And then once you do that, it becomes part of the culture. Cultures are built over a long period of time. You just can't come in and just say, oh, this is our culture. You start with it, and then together we all make that culture. So it can only be as good as our weakest common denominator. And so you have to continually raise your weakest common denominator.
Yeah, I have a thing that I say. It says, your brand is only as strong as your unhappiest employee on their worst day.
Yeah, well, that's what a brand is, a promise delivered. It's not ours, not the type styles. It's not this. You know, I hear people talk about, well, I'm working on my brand. Well, how about work on your promise? Because if you work on your promise, you got your brand.
We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Your Brand Marketing.live podcast is sponsored by How to Retain Employees Through Leadership online course. Go to courses.yourbrandmarketing.com. That's courses.yourbrandmarketing.com. And put in Your Living Brand 50 for a $50 coupon. Thanks a lot. Welcome back to the Your Living Brand Live Show. So here's the thing. What does your onboarding process look like? Because to be able to build that culture, to be able to build that brand promise, to be able to get people to understand the true values of the company and live them, it all starts from the day they walk in the door.
Totally. But it actually starts before that. It starts in picking the people, right?
Yeah.
And we're really slow at hiring people. We probably notoriously slow. You know, I've been looking for a new person here for like 4 months, and I finally found that person, but we're still going through the process of interviewing and making sure they meet this person and this person. And with us traveling a lot, that's the nature of the game. We spend a long time finding the right kinds of people. And then once we get the right kinds of people, then the system itself should take care of a lot of the indoctrination, right?
Right. Yeah. But do you guys have like a mentorship program or a buddy system or?
Yeah, we have a little bit of that, probably not as formal as it needs to be. And then, of course, we are always doing what we call culture talks. We're doing talks amongst ourselves, right? I mean, we lead the Hero Club. So just like we make every single CEO sign a pledge, our employees have to sign a pledge that they're going to operate in the same kind of manner, right? And then people are articulating that, leading it. So you have to, and the best way to do is to lead that by example and continue to check in with people and make the right things happen. That's a big part. I mean, right down to, we even have a NFG, new frickin' guy.
Yeah.
So I usually say a different word, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
That's a guy or a gal, and it's not a hazing process, but what we do is whoever the new person is, somebody yells, hey, we do a lot of things where we buy pizzas for lunch or subs for lunch or Indian food and meals or a lot of times Five Guys, or here in New York, we like to go for rice pudding. Well, if you're the NFG, that's who goes.
Absolutely.
Even if you're the vice president of such and such, you're the NFG. Until the new person comes on board, you're the one that's got to go get that. And it's just part of it's a servant mentality of how we serve up everybody. And there's no job that's beneath any of us to go and do.
Well, I heard you even clean the toilets.
Oh, I clean the toilets. Absolutely. I clean the toilets all the time. I own the building, so it's helpful that I do that. But more than importantly, it's like I like a clean bathroom. So if I can do that, there's nothing you can't do.
No, I mean, that's the thing. If chairman of the board is sitting there cleaning toilets, it's hard to say, well, I'm not going to do this.
Yeah. Well, we have a court. We even have a company apartment that when people are staying in a certain city, they use. Who do you think cleans that? Me. Yeah. Now, some of our other team members, they understand that and they help out. They pitch in too.
Right.
You know, strip the beds, throw the sheets in the washing machine, get stuff going before they leave. That's good. That's just good practice, man. That's just good. That's just telling people we have the right kinds of people to do stuff like that.
Well, exactly.
You empty the garbage cans. You don't have to ask. Jeez, you wake up, it's done. It's awesome.
It's funny. Years ago, I used to hire MBAs. And the first thing we used to do is we used to put them down in the mailroom for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And you very quickly got the difference between the people who got it, who said, you know what? You got to learn every job that's in the company.
Yeah.
The people who says, how dare you? I have an MBA. And the people who said, how dare you? I've got an MBA, usually didn't last that long in the company.
Yeah. How dare you? Yeah. I got an MBA, but you don't know where the copy machine is.
That's right. Or you don't know how to use it.
Yeah. So I'm the guy that knows that. How's that? I love that.
It was great for culture building to be able to sit there. And it wasn't a hazing thing. It was more the fact of getting people to understand that there is no job that doesn't need to be understood. And the employee that understands what finance is doing, what ops is doing, what sales is doing, what marketing is doing, what the shipper's doing.
Yeah.
And can articulate on a regular basis as, oh, I get what they do and why they do it. That's a much stronger employee because they have a more of a 360 view of the company and they understand how the different departments work together.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, that's the way it should be.
So tell me about Catlin's Law. I love hearing the story about Catlin's Law.
Well, I put that's my very first story in the book, and I was actually telling somebody this last night, the same story. You know, I had this young woman by the name of Caitlin who came to work for us, a very talented, unbelievably talented young woman who I'd picked out of an audience. She'd been tweeting about me for weeks before I got to this group. I was reading my social feed. I'm seeing her. I'm going, man, I want to know this young woman. Because this was an advertising students group. And so it was a marketing advertising group. And so I was looking for young talent, as I always do. I look for great talent. And so here she is tweeting. So I ended up hiring her. And in fact, I remember at being the speech, I said, where's Caitlin? Caitlin, I said her last name, I won't do it here. And she raised her hand. I said, Caitlin, you come see me because you tweeted, you were socially active, you were posting. I noticed that. I want to talk to you about coming to workforce. So that's how she got started. So that tells you something. Very good initiatives. Well, one day I was about to leave the office to go and meet with a potential client because we own another company called Tallgrass, which stands if you want to run with the big dogs, you got to pee in the tall grass, and there's strategic marketing and social media PR. And I was going to go meet with them, and they were taking the company public, and we were getting it ready. And she stops about 5 minutes before we go, she stops by my desk and says, you know, Jeff, should we take some color copies of the presentation? I don't know, should we? And then I said, Caitlin, here's the deal. You get to ask me 21 questions. You can ask me any 21 questions you want. What's the best train to take across town? Where's the best place for Indian food? What's best Italian restaurant? The meaning of life. You can ask me any question you want. Anyone, business, personal, whatever, but you only get 21. That's all. 21. Is that, and now you're asking me a question. Is this one of your questions? And she goes, I don't think so. I said, well, good career move. Because if I have to answer that, what the hell do I need you for? And I said, you know, I hired you because you're a big dog. I hired you, and I went through the story again. And here you are asking me a question that you already know the answer to. I said, let me ask you, we're leaving now in 3.5 minutes. Do you have time to make the copies? She goes, no. I said, get the hell away from me. Don't ever ask me another question like that again. We, you know, and most of us know the answers. Most of us come to us and say, well, it's not in the budget. We don't have this or this. Well, if it's a priority, make it happen. If it's supposed to happen, do it.
Find room in the budget.
Yeah, find it. I mean, this is like, you know, so, oh, we changed the budget. Ooh, oh, we have a budget. I didn't even know we had one.
Well, it's a matter of instilling trust in your people. Say, look, here's what I expect from you. This is what the mission, the vision, the values of the company are. This is what we're trying to achieve. Go.
Yeah. Well,
and the great people rise to that. The great people sit there and say, you know what? I know that I'm going to make mistakes. I know that I could do something wrong, but if I'm always going to do it within the thought process is I'm trying to take care of the customer and I'm trying to take care of the business. You know what? Most great leaders are going to say, oh, you made a mistake? Okay. What did we learn from it?
Right. You know, without question.
And those are the people that you want to work for. You want to work for the people that don't look at that, and the finger doesn't come out and say, how dare you? The finger comes out and says, what did we learn? And how do we move forward?
Trust has a very interesting component. You know, trust has three equal parts. One, sincerity. So I'm always going to grant you the sincerity that you're trying hard, you're doing it, doing what you need to do, or you have the right mindset about it. Then the next two steps are either our reliability and competency. And now I'm going to judge you based on those two. So are you reliable and are you competent? Because I've watched people who are competent not be reliable. I've watched people who are reliable and not be very competent. Like they'll screw it up every single time. You know, those are the attributes that we kind of measure against when it comes to trust.
Yeah, I believe the same thing. My attitude is, you mess up. Okay, did you learn from it? Great, let's figure it out. If you do it over and over again, that's when we have a serious problem.
Amen, brother. Amen. Think big, act bigger. The rewards of being relentless. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I love it. Talk to me about clock changes.
Well, clock changers are, you know, when I was at Kodak, I showed up like a week early. And so one of the things I did was I wanted to test the mettle of my team. And so what I did was I went around, I had this one meeting room. I was meeting everybody and kind of getting a download. Here I am running $17 billion marketing budget, $187 billion, I think, at the time, gross revenue. And I was trying to figure out what's what, how do I move this thing? I got to move the needle fast because, you know, the average lifespan of a CMO at that time was 18 months. Second you hit the floor, it's, you know, dead CMO walking. So, you know, I really had to move things very quickly. And of course, Kodak was on a downward spiral at the time. And so we needed to really stop the hemorrhaging. And so what I did was I got the room early and I changed the clock. I moved it ahead by 20 minutes. And then that way, when people come in, they looked at the clock, looked at their watch, and they looked at the clock, they saw that was wrong. And I wanted to see what they would do because they'd start complaining about other clocks and other buildings and rooms and so forth. Then start telling me how they needed to form a little task force or that someone's going to call somebody to go fix it. This went on for a couple of weeks and the same groups coming in. A couple of weeks. And they'd come back in because I was having these meetings every day because we had to really move stuff. I mean, this is like entire straits. And so, and I finally just got ticked off because they were complaining about it. And I said, why doesn't somebody just do something? And a woman got up who worked for me, and she hiked up her dress a little bit, put up a chair underneath the clock, stood on the chair, and changed the clock. And I immediately hired her as my chief of staff the very next day. That's a true story. It was a position I created just because this is a woman that gets stuff done. Let's go. She wasn't messing around. Once she felt she had permission, she went. But let's give everybody permission. Everybody's got permission to be a clock changer. See a piece of paper on the ground when you're working in the business, pick it up. You see something that needs to be changed, change it. Nobody's asking you to permission. What? There's no permission. What? I don't even understand that when people start asking me about that.
I have a great story. Years ago, I was in the direct mail business, and I get a phone call at 11 o'clock at night from some pressman. Never met this guy before. Junior press guy, been on the job a few weeks, and we're running a quarter million pieces. Nice big health
job.
Good
run.
Nice size run, quarter million pieces. It's about a 120 page catalog, and we're running about a quarter million of them. And he gives me a call, and I had gone off, I had signed off about an hour earlier, and I was out maybe having a late dinner or something like that. And he says, something's wrong. He says, I shut the press down. I said, you shut the press down? He says, yeah, I shut the press down. He says, you need to come back in here. And I went, what is it? He says, I was reading this over, and the name of the company is spelled wrong.
That's a good guy.
You know what? I made sure this guy got a $25,000 bonus.
Yeah.
This guy took the initiative and sat there and said, you know what? There's something wrong. Instead of just running it and saying, well, it looked right.
Not my problem.
Yeah. He actually took the thing to shut down a press, which
is not an easy thing to do.
It's not an easy thing to do. Yeah, I mean, especially those things, they're running 50, 55,000 sheets an hour. The waste that's created when you shut one of those things down is incredible.
And the setup time, the restart time, you have to reshoot new plates. You have to, it's a lot of work. Yeah.
It's a lot of work. But this guy realized that the name of the client was spelled wrong.
That's pretty good.
And he caught it, and five other people who signed off on this didn't.
Yeah.
And that guy, you know, took initiative, went ahead and did it. And God, this is 20 years ago. He's still working at that press, and I think he's the head pressman now.
Oh, that's fantastic.
He's the guy who trades people. He says, you know what? Don't ever be afraid to shut down a press.
Yeah, that's cool.
is amazing to me when you treat your staff with respect, if you give them the authority and you give them the trust, the amazing things that they can do for you.
That's awesome, man. That's just fantastic.
So my question to you is, what's the best lesson you ever learned from somebody else? What was the one thing that made you go, wow, this changed my life?
Well, I mean, I have all those kinds of moments. They're every day they happen in what I do. It's always the early mentors, each one teaching you something different. The one that I'll bring to mind, and there's many people who have helped me along the way, but the one that I'll bring to bear that I thought was really cool is Mike O'Connor. He passed a few years ago, and I bought a printing shop from Mike, since we're talking about printing. And it was a little quick print and copy shop. We had two locations, and you know, I was the biggest in the area, and bought the company because I was doing about half of his business. I was sending it to him. So I thought, well, geez, I should buy you then. And he taught me the value of a Z out. Now, for those of you young people that are listening today or haven't worked in retail, haven't done a cash register, you don't know what I'm talking about. But a Z out is what you would do. We had a manual cash register back then, and you turned the key to the Z.
Mm-hmm.
And you hit the button and it added up all the receipts for the day. And so what that did was now I know what my sales total was for the day. And so that was the greatest thrill I had. And no matter, even if I wasn't in the office, I would call and say, what's the Z out? Because this is before email and those kind of things. And I'd say, what's the Z out? And I'd keep a running ledger. So I knew exactly what I had to do each and every day, the average per day for that month, compared it to the average of last month, compared to the quarter, a running total for the year. So I knew exactly what I needed to do every day. Just like today, I know exactly how much I have to sell every day in order to hit my goal for not only the week, the month, the year. And then, of course, hopefully that leads to my profitability and everything else. But I know what the value of that is every single day, the Z out. That would be it.
That's something that most people will never think about because they sit there and go, well, I want to make $10 million this year.
Okay, $10 million a year divided by, now, if you're working by the hour, it's 20 hours and 2080.
Yeah.
If it's by the year, it's about 250.
Right? Yeah.
Because you got to take off 102 weekends because most of you aren't going to work that hard. Now, for me, it'd be 365, right?
And so, or at least 364. You'd take Christmas Day off, maybe.
Yeah, no, not much there either. But I do. I do take time off, let's be clear. But at the same time, let's understand that some of us use that very effectively. So, yeah, I'd have to figure out for $10 million, I'd have to gross $500,000 a day, you know, or is it $50,000 a day?
$50,000 a day.
Yeah, it's $50,000 a day. And so to do that, that's what I'd have to do.
But there's a very few people out there that are going to break it down to sit there and say, okay, what do I need to do a day?
I can tell you what it is because my number is actually 60 a day.
There you go.
60,000 a day is what we're trying to do. That's incremental revenue to what we already do.
Nice.
That's what I'm trying to do, is an extra $60,000, boom, just like that, to have incremental revenue. Yeah.
So before I let you go, I had a couple questions I want to ask you.
Sure.
One, I want to talk to you quickly about the C-Suite Network, because I think that that's probably the best thing that we haven't talked about yet, because that's the latest, the greatest. Tell me a little bit about the C-Suite Network and how people can get in touch with you that way.
Well, you can reach out to Hazlett, H-A-Y-Z-L-E-T-T, Jeffrey, on any social media platform you can find me. But if you go to C-Suite Network, so C-Suite, S-U-I-T-E, network.com, you can find us there. It's an organization, a networking organization for 350,000 trusted executives. And then we have C-Suite Network advisors, those people who are advisors to that particular network, coaches, trainers, thought leaders. We have podcasters with C-Suite Radio. We have television shows with C-Suite TV. We have books from C-Suite Book Club. So we have all these different products that we typically have and services that we then serve that particular market, which is those businesses that are greater than $2.5 million, and you have to be a VP or higher. And that's who we serve.
Awesome. And here's the last question. And this is when I ask everybody as they leave the show. When you leave a meeting and you get in your car and you drive away, what's the one thing you want people to think about you when you're not in the room?
Success. This guy delivers success, and that's what it's all about. And that's really what it is, that I can touch him in that way. And hopefully it's motivation and inspirational, educational and all those that you could, all those superlatives that you can feel. But that's really what I want people to do.
Awesome. Jeffrey, thank you for being an amazing guest. I loved having you on here. We unpacked an enormous amount of stuff. And I got to sit back and listen to this again, because I'm sure there's some real gold in there. Even I missed.
Well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure. Thank you.
This has been the YourLivingBrand.live show. I want to thank you for tuning in today. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to the show at YourLivingBrand.live and share your favorite episodes with colleagues and friends. At Your Brand Marketing, we help companies engage, retain, and grow their most valuable assets, their employees. If you're tired of losing great staff and want to retain your best employees, build brand champions and leaders at any level. Contact us for a 30-minute consultation at yourbrandmarketing.com. That's www.yourbrandmarketing.com. Thank you again for listening and sharing. Tune in next week when we ask another guest, what's your story?